Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the May 3rd edition of the Journal, and we'll start with the first page stories. Community Center completion date pushed back. The Villa Grove Community Center Director Bethany Soroka said that air ducts for the new Community Center were on back order and that the project completion date will be pushed back for the immediate future at the April 24th Villa Grove City Council meeting. She also said that summer recreational basketball and softball were starting and that she and Director McSell had worked together to ensure that the fields were in good condition. Sorovska said that Robert Fancher, senior at Villa Grove High School, has been hired as the manager of concessions for the summer. Mayor Eversole Gunter and Alderman Matthew Pangburn were absent from the meeting. Alderman Boots Blaney sat in as mayor pro tem. Resident Jeff Markle voiced his concerns about the new street name changes. Blaney assured him that the request came from the county 911 services. Changing the street names removed duplicate names from the 911 database. Blaney acknowledged it would cause some consternation among residents, and Administrator Athey made some suggestions for a smooth transition. Blaney then called for department chair reports, and the city treasurer, Jackie Athey, reported that she'd received the final audit results and was working on small corrections they had discovered. Athey said she was working on things relating to the end of the fiscal year. She also noted that the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund, IMRF, would increase by 1% for the fiscal year of 2024. Public Works Director Mark McSell reported that the equipment needed for road repairs would arrive soon. He also stated that the Zest for Life Center roofing issues had been completed, and the new public work building was in the final stages of completion, and that the new floors for the Zest for Life Center were set to be installed around May 25th. He also noted that the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, doors were set to be installed soon. Blaney then asked for a consensus on paying Brewer and Russo pay request number 10, tabled a call for consensus on a change order for the community building, and finally called for a consensus on several Frick concrete bids for work around Villa Grove, including improvements to Main Street, sidewalks, and storm drains. The next article, summer pool passes are available for purchase. The pool is slated to open on May 27th. Summer is quickly approaching, and it's time to get ready for the upcoming Tuscola Irvin Park pool season. Tuscola Mayor Daniel Kleiss is excited to provide the community with recreational opportunities at the swimming pool again this summer. With inflation pressures, it gets harder each year for small towns to operate these types of recreational options. I'm proud to say that Tuscola residents will be able to enjoy their pool again this year, said Kleiss. The pool will be open for the season beginning May 27th. Normal operating hours, 12:30 to 7:30 p.m. daily. Adult-only swim hours, 11:30 to 12:30 p.m. daily. Residents can skip the lines at the pool by purchasing their season passes for the Tuscola pool in advance of the pool opening date. Passes will again be available in both an unlimited season pass and a multiple-entry shareable pass. The passes can also be purchased online at thetuscola.org/pool. Passes can also be requested at City Hall at 214 North Main Street, Water Department, walk-up door. The unlimited season passes require a photo of the pass holder. Photos can be submitted online or taken in person at City Hall. Electronic passes will be processed and emailed within a day after purchase. Optional physical pass cards will be available to be picked up within 2 business days at City Hall prior to the pool opening for the season or at the pool front desk after May 27th. Prices for pool passes are the same as last year. The City Council raised the rate from $125 to $200 for a 2-hour rental for up to 50 people at the April 24th meeting. Treasurer Alta Long said last year's rate did not cover the personnel costs associated with a pool party. More information can be found at www.tuscola.org/pool. Questions can be directed there, or you can call City Hall at 217-253-2112. And the last front page story, Villa Grove Bustling with Celebrations by Tony Hooker. Villa Grove will be the site of 3 very important events on Saturday, May 6th, with the Loyalty Day Parade, Street Dedication Ceremony, and Summer Recreation Skills Competition all set to kick off festivities. First is Loyalty Day. First established in 1921 as an Americanization Day, Loyalty Day was created as a reaffirmation of loyalty to the U.S. and as a direct counterpoint to Communist May Day celebrations. On July 18, 1958, Congress made Loyalty Day an official May 1st holiday. This will be the 48th annual Loyalty Day Parade here in Villa Grove, according to Troy and Jennifer Gray, who represent Villa Grove's Walter Jones VFW Post 2876. Troy, who has been involved with the Loyalty Day parade since 2015, said the parade is all about being proud to be an American, and Jennifer concurs. It's showing support toward all Americans, whether you're a veteran or not, she stated. Troy added that it's also about supporting American ideals. The parade will get a boost in entrance this year, per Troy. Charlie Burris has helped me out a lot this year, and the Lincoln's Challenge is going to be sending a squad down, he said. If you've never seen them, they're quite impressive. Burris will also be bringing several vehicles from the National Guard for the day's events. The parade will begin lining up at 10 a.m. with a planned 11 a.m. start, and there will be free spaghetti dinner for participants at the VFW afterward. This year's parade will be one of three in Illinois, with Arcola joining Villa Grove and New Lenox as parade hosts. The Grays are looking forward to bringing the community together for the event and hope they get a large turnout. Second, we have the street dedication. A section of Beach Lane will be designated as Honorary Bill Gabbard Lane this Saturday to honor his lifetime of dedication to the community. Bill, who graduated from Villa Grove High School in 1960, worked for several years as a meat cutter for Jewel Eisner before purchasing a meat market in Danville and a packing house in Clinton. What many don't know is that for a time he was driving from Villa Grove to Danville to Clinton and home every day as he worked to get these businesses up and running. He eventually sold both in 1987 and bought a food distribution center that his family continues to operate to this day. Gabbard always liked to keep the spotlight off himself, but there are many instances of him supporting Villa Grove businesses that might otherwise have closed. He always provided a bevy of ingredients for any local fundraiser or athletic team, always helping and always without fanfare. He truly was a great citizen of the community and therefore deserving of a memorial in his name. For 40 years, young men and women benefited from the efforts of Frank Thomas. For Villa Grovians of my generation, he was the coach of what we now call the Pony League. His rough edges, anyone who couldn't field a ground ball cleanly could expect to be referred to as a clod or worse, were smoothed by the fact that deep down he cared about all of us. Any moderate success I had on the diamond is directly attributable to him. Franco, as everyone knew him, was a formidable pitcher in his own right before turning to the role of coach, and many benefited from his teachings. After retiring from coaching ranks, Frank took great pride in maintaining the field of play for Villa Grove Summer Leagues. The sand infield at Hanson Park was truly immaculate thanks to his patient ministrations. An entire generation of young men who served as his assistants can attest to his attention for detail and also for the colorful language he used to make his point. In honor of his lifetime of dedication to the young ballplayers of the area, the city of Villa Grove will be naming the circle drive around Hanson Park Frank Thomas Way. And finally, the Skills Challenge. Following the street dedication, all participants in Villa Grove Summer Recreation are invited to participate in a Skills Challenge. Players from the 2nd, 3rd grade league, the 4th, 5th grade league, and the junior high league baseball and softball teams will be competing in base running, throwing, and batting within their age divisions. Players do not need to be pre-registered, but their coaches have the registration forms. The activities are set to begin around 1:30 p.m. We'll move now to the obituaries. Jerry D. Wilson, 77, of Villa Grove, passed away on Wednesday, April 26, 2023, at Carl Hospital in Urbana. A celebration of Jerry's life will be held at a later date. In lieu of flowers, memorial dedications may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Tracy Lynn Bowles, 53, of Chenoa, unexpectedly passed away Saturday, April 22, 2023, at OSF St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington. Visitation will be held from 1 to 3 p.m. Saturday, May 6th at the Hillegoss Schrader Funeral Home, 66 East U.S. Highway 36, Atwood. Darlene S. Van Sickle, 89, of Charleston, formerly of Newman, passed away on Sunday, April 16, 2023, at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center in Mattoon. A celebration of Darlene's life was held Saturday, April 22nd at the Joins Funeral Home in Newman, with Pastor Duane Piercy officiating. Private burial followed. A visitation was held prior to the service. Memorial donations may be made to CCAR Industries. Jean Johnston, age 99, of Urbana, passed away on April 18, 2023. Schilling Funeral Home Mattoon is in charge of arrangements. Delbert D. Lingefelter, 91, of Tuscola, passed away at 1 a.m. on Monday, April 24, 2023, at his residence. Private services were held at Camp Butler National Cemetery in Sangamon County on Friday, April 28th, where he was laid to rest with his wife of 66 years. The Edwards Funeral Home assisted with the arrangements. J. J. Schreiber, 88, of Villa Grove, passed away on Sunday, April 16th, 2023, at his home. A celebration of Jay's life will be held from 1 to 3 p.m. on Sunday, June 11th at the Tri-City Country Club in Villa Grove. Memorial donations may be made to the Douglas County Animal Shelter. John C. Bud Schonkweiler, 82, of Bement, passed away on Tuesday, April 25, 2023, at 4:59 p.m. at his residence in Bement. Visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, May 6, at the Heinz Funeral Home, 348 North Pyatt Street, Bement. Memorial services will follow at the Heinz Funeral Home, Bement, at 11 a.m. Saturday, May 6. The pastor, Naomi Roberts, will officiate. Burial will be at the St. Joseph Catholic Cemetery, Ivesdale. Memorial contributions can be made to the Animal Hospital of Monticello or the Pyatt County Animal Shelter. Bernard Jean Eugene Stroll, 87, of Tuscola, passed away at 6:14 a.m. Tuesday, April 25th at his daughter's home. Private family services will be held. Neptune Society is in charge of cremation arrangements. Memorial contributions may be made to the Tuscola United Methodist Church, 901 North Prairie Street, Tuscola, Illinois. The main stories in the B section. Program seeks to end homelessness in region. The Illinois Office to Prevent and End Homelessness, along with South Central Continuum of Care Eastern Regions, seven counties, Clark, Coles, Crawford, Cumberland, Douglas, Edgar, and Jasper, marked April 24th as day one of the 100-day Rural Homeless Challenge. There are 49 families on a wait list. The goal for this 100-day Rural Homeless Challenge is to safely and stably house 29 families, and the additional 20 families will be supported with connections to behavioral health services in these several communities. To make this happen, the community needs to be involved, the group said. This means people with lived experiences, formerly homeless, frontline staff from health services, behavioral health services, homeless shelters, service providers, landlords, police, EMT, education, community, city, and country businesses, and concerned citizens can assist in a few different ways. 1. Give input, ideas to end homelessness. 2. Sign a letter to show others you support the 100-day Rural Homeless Challenge. 3. Become a team member. Attend weekly Zoom meetings and work on goals. There are programs available to house these families. These programs vary from deposit and first month rent to rental assistant. Landlords are needed to work with these programs and give clients a place to call home. To get involved, contact team sponsor Dana Tell at 217-549-9045 or Danette at houseyourhomerecovery.org. Catholic Charities host Murder Mystery Dinner. Mattoon Catholic Charities will be hosting its annual fundraiser at the Walkway, located at 1501 Lakeland Boulevard in Mattoon, on Saturday, May 13th. Unlock the mystery at this Murder Mystery Dinner by Mafia Murders. The event starts at 6 p.m. Tickets include a meal by Griffin Catering. Tickets may be purchased in advance or online at the website at cc.dio.org. If you're unable to attend but would still like to make a donation, you may do so at the website cc.dio.org/ways-to-give-donate. Everyone falls and needs a helping hand from time to time. With the continued help of our highly motivated staff, selfless volunteers, and generous board members, we're able to provide that helping hand to those in need. We're grateful for community members who continue to extend kindness and grace to Catholic Charities, said Joshua Benton, Area Director of Catholic Charities of Coles, Douglas, and Edgar Counties. Programs offered by Catholic Charities of Coles, Douglas, and Edgar Counties include food pantry, mobile food pantry, clothing, housewares, furniture assistance, MedAssist, Blessed Baby Adaptive and Equipment Loan Program, and Boomerang Blessing Resale Store. For more information about the Catholic Charities of Coles, Edgar, and Edgar Counties, or to make a donation or to volunteer, please contact Josh Benton, Area Director, at 217-235-0420. Lakeland Instructor Earns Teacher of the Year Award. Business Instructor, Program Coordinator of Accounting Cynthia Phipps earned the Eastern Illinois Business Education Association, the EIBEA, Teacher of the Year Award for 2023. Phipps has been an active member of EIBEA and IBEA for many years, and one of her nominators said she's always quicker to step up and volunteer to help, plan, organize, proofread, provide morale, support, whatever else to be done for the EIBEA meetings and activities. She's supportive of all of her co-workers at Lakeland College and truly cares about her students, Marcy Sadworth-White, EIBEA President and Business Instructor Program Coordinator of Desktop Public Graphic Design, said she's proven herself to be a dedicated and caring teacher who has earned the respect of her students and peers. Phipps can often be found spending extra time outside of class with her students to help them understand concept and be successful. As a program advisor, she helps her accounting majors stay on track towards successfully completing their graduation goals. Those who nominated FIPS for the award include Sadrith White, Business Instructor Program Coordinator of Office Professionals Kathleen Doherty, and Division Chair Business Instructor Tanya Kessler. FIPS has also served as the EIBEA treasurer for many years and helps to organize all of the EIBEA meetings, keeping track of meeting registration and maintaining financial records. Cindy is very deserving of this award, both professionally and personally, Sadrith White said. EIBEA is so fortunate to have her serve as our treasurer, and she continues to serve year after year. As the current EIBEA president, I don't know what I would do without her in the treasurer role. For more information about FIPS or the accounting program at Lakeland College, visit lakelandcollege.edu. And we have time this week for the My Personal Side column by Craig Hastings. I hope you read last week's column because this one picks up where that one left off. Tonight is day nine since my total hip replacement surgery. I reported to Carle Hospital at 5 a.m. last Wednesday for a scheduled 7:30 a.m. surgery. The surgery took place on time, and about 2 hours later, I remember waking up in extreme pain in my hip. I assume, by the way the recovery room nurse responded, that whatever nerve block had worn off a bit early. In short, I was given something for the pain, and I went back to sleep. The next time I woke up, all was well as far as the pain I was feeling. I was eager to leave. At first, there was a series of things I would have to be able to do. A short walk, a few stair steps, and a series of questions and answers, and then I was ready to get dressed. Getting dressed was a challenge. My right leg was essentially nothing more than a heavy log that was difficult and painful to move. I gave up trying to put on my socks and shoes because leaning or bending over was absolutely prohibited with a new hip. That really didn't matter because the pain when trying to bend over was more than I could stand anyway. After I was dressed and ready, it was off to the curbside for pickup and my ride home. I live in a bi-level house by myself, so any direction into my house is a stair climb. That was interesting, but I managed. Because I have 27 staples in my hip, there is no comfortable way to lay down or even sit down. Everyone gets sent home with some sort of pain reliever, but I'll tell you now, it wasn't enough that I was able to get a good night's sleep. As a matter of fact, I still haven't been able to sleep through a single night without getting up 3 or 4 times to take a walk around the interior of my home. It's the only pain relief I can get at night. It sounds odd, but for me, it's the only relief I can get at night when I'm trying to sleep. Getting out of bed in the morning is painful, but much better now at day 9. Once I'm up and moving about, it is reasonably comfortable. I use a walker to move around the day of my surgery, but I haven't needed it since. I followed orders not to shower, but instead sponge bath in a sink for the first week. That lasted 3 days, and ever since I've been getting in the shower. Getting in and out of the shower is the most cringeworthy thing I do because I live here by myself. I know that if I slip and fall, I'll be headed to the emergency room to relocate my dislocated new hip, and that would be after I managed to get to my phone. A Carle physical therapist made her visit 48 hours after the surgery. Fortunately for me, she concluded I was doing better than expected 48 hours post-op. She coached me through several exercises, and depending on how I was doing on her next visit, I might just get released from home physical therapy sessions. She returned this last Wednesday morning and put me through the drills and decided that unless I took a turn backward, she would release me. My next visit is this Thursday to have my surgeon remove the 27 staples. I'm continuing to work hard at home with the exercises I've been given, maybe too much so. I'm not supposed to bend over past 90 degrees for fear of the new hip joint dislocating. I can't cross my legs for fear of the same. This is difficult because I can easily bend over past 90 degrees now and have been able to since day 4. I have to think about it every time I put shoes on so as not to be stupid and end up and out on the floor in pain because my new joint dislocated. I'm at a point of going nuts because I'm stuck at home by myself and not supposed to be doing much of anything at all. I'm ready for the next step forward for sure. I want to get back to work and I want to feel useful again. I want to reach out and thank everyone who has contacted me, wishing me the best of luck with my recovery. Boyd checks on me about every other day, and yes, sir, I appreciate the effort you make to check on me. I only use a walker one day, but on the day I needed it for sure. Thank you to the couple who were kind enough to allow me to borrow theirs. I've got 2 new police cars to get ready for service, including stripping them, and 2 more to strip out, removing the lettering, and get sold. I have much to do waiting on me, and I'll be getting to it all at once I'm released to do so. Any of you that find yourself in the position of hip replacement, reach out to me and I might tell you everything you might expect from day to day. Don't be dumb like me and wait too long. The pain I had before the surgery was worse than the pain I'm experiencing now. If you're told you need to do it, Do it because the pain gets worse quickly. A big thank you goes out to Dr. Kawakita at Carl and the surgical staff who performed my surgery. I'm sure I'll be doing the left hip in the near future, and I'll be sure to request Dr. Kawakoski perform my next one. There's an article by State Representative Jed Davis, Absolute Power at Capitol Prevents Lawmakers from Addressing Important State Issues. Running for office last year, I knew Illinois was broken, but I hadn't come to realize in just a few months ago of serving as a state representative in the 76th district that the problems are much greater than I ever imagined as a candidate. I have found that there are many good ideas that have been both Democrat and Republican support, but these bills never see the light of day because the House leadership refuses to allow them to move forward. For instance, I'm co-sponsor of House Bill 1079, which ends the 35-year moratorium on nuclear power plant construction in Illinois. This legislation has strong bipartisan support, but it has never been called for a vote on the House floor despite of overwhelming support in committee. The reason legislation such as House Bill 1079 does not come up for a vote is because the House leadership won't allow it. Power in Springfield is absolute and unfortunately wielded not by the body as a whole, but by individuals who control the House and Senate chambers. Former House Speaker Michael Madigan may no longer be in charge of the House, but the rules he used to control the process are very much intact. The rights of individual members are almost non-existent. What has this top-down approach gotten us? Are we tackling the big issues? Are we solving the state's problems? We could not take a few moments to vote on important bipartisan legislation to end the moratorium on nuclear power plants and ultimately address the rising cost of electricity in Illinois and to ensure we do not have rolling brownouts. Instead, we spent time considering legislation to ban the use of pronouns boy and girl, referring to children in statute HB 1596, require menstrual products be put in all public restrooms, HB 3093, and ban cat declawing, HB 3093. I talked to a lot of voters in the 2022 election cycle, and not once did I hear anyone bring up the need to put feminine hygiene products in every public restroom. People want lower utility bills, they want better schools, they want more jobs, and they want more opportunities. Instead of addressing these central core issues, our leaders are focused on banning cat declawing and other mind-numbingly inane ideas. It would be one thing to entertain legislation like this if we were considering the important issues facing our state, but we are not. One of my bills, HB 2609, requires price transparency at hospitals. It has bipartisan support and will go a long way towards stabilizing the price of health care in our state. It never got called and was never even heard in committee. I understand that time is a factor. There are thousands and thousands of bills introduced every year, and it is difficult to give them all a fair hearing. But why wasn't a bill requiring price transparency at hospitals called for a vote when a bill banning cat declawing was called? We wonder why we have the fifth highest unemployment rate in the nation. We wonder why we lost more than 100,000 people last year, and we wonder why we pay some of the highest taxes in the nation. Our state is in serious trouble, and it is being run by unserious people. If I learned anything as a freshman legislator, it's that the go-along to get-along politics lead only to a permanent minority that constantly is forced to cede power to people who think the most pressing issue facing Illinois is the availability of tampons in men's rooms. I may be a small voice in a big pond, but all it takes to begin the process of change is for people like me to point out the obvious. There are some of us who are doing just that, and our numbers and influence are growing. Because the thing political elites have forgotten is that they have built the house of cards that will all come crashing down once their incompetence and poor leadership is exposed. We deserve better. What we need is strong leaders who will stand up and declare the emperor has no clothes, and that is exactly what I intend to do every day I'm in Springfield. State Representative Jed Davis is a Republican from Newman who was elected to his first term in 2022. And there's an article, Being Aware of Autism Isn't Enough, Holding It All Together by Amy McCollum. If my calendar came printed with all of the legal holidays, national and international celebration, and all the awareness days and months, there would be not any room for me to left, right, and my own appointments. I can't keep up. I didn't even know there was a National Cat Lady Day, but I count myself as one. National Ice Cream Day, I think we all know how to celebrate that. But April was Autism Awareness Month, and I have something to say about that. I know a thing or two about autism. I have two children who've been diagnosed as being on the spectrum. The autism spectrum is like the rainbow, an arc. A person can be anywhere on that arc, from severely to mildly affected. One of my children is more seriously affected than the other one, but I do see similarities between the two of them. One of their doctors told me autism is like an umbrella, more than a box of disorders. Under the umbrella of autism, there are many other things that coexist with autism. My daughter Portia, for instance, isn't just affected by autism, but also by attention deficit disorder, anxiety disorder, sensory integration disorder, speech timing disorder, easy gag reflex, stomach issues, tic disorder, hypersensitivity to noise and light, and unusual fears. I'm sure there are more things than I can list, but she has so many good qualities, I don't want to forget those. She's very smart and scored higher on her SAT than any of my other six children and was easily accepted into the UOI, has an intense desire to help people around the world around her, and loves God with all of her heart. She's a walking encyclopedia on many topics. My other child on the spectrum can pass as allistic, normal, with few exceptions. Anxiety disorder, attention deficit disorder, dysgraphia, motion disorder, and executive functioning disorder. He too is loving, friendly, giving, smart, and just a good young man. I have also worked as a certified teacher's aide in the public school system with several children on the autism spectrum who have had more severe issues than my own children, especially with language skills. It's very challenging, but I enjoyed seeing growth in each kiddo that I could reach even a little bit. It takes patience, understanding, and a growing trust between teachers and students to achieve goals and go beyond what working with special needs kiddos. The parents, too, of these kiddos have all been wonderful to interact with and very helpful in their kids' educational needs. Our local schools are doing a good job working with kids on the spectrum, in my humble opinion. There is a lot of one-on-one teaching and the right environment to produce a solid growth outcome and fun experience for the kids. How about you? With 1 in 54 children being diagnosed with autism by age 8, according to a 2016 report by the CDC, do you know anyone with autism? If not yet, chances are you will. What do you really know about autism? Be aware that it exists. It exists is good, but that is not enough. Autism is real. It's everywhere. It's quickly reaching into every family. It's not someone else's problem anymore. Autism is my daughter's. It's my son. Autism is incurable, and it's forever. It's not like the shows on TV where a doctor or lawyer is endearing and cheerful, or a brilliant scientist and I have friends to play video games with on Friday night. Autism is secluding. It makes my kids wear headphones to hush out the world around them and keeps them away from crowds and the rush of the world. It affects them and our family as a whole. Autism prevents my daughter from realizing the joke and sarcasm, her understanding comedy in a movie. Autism brings tears instead of laughter. Autism makes my children, now young adults, prone to tics, both vocal and physical, such as clearing their throat, humming softly, hand fidgeting, etc. For that reason, I have to be vigilant about seating them in public places away from people they will distract, but I will not always be around. Someday my autistic young adults will be on their own, and the public must be aware of these unique and wonderfully gifted, kind people. Be aware, but also be kind. Be accepting and be patient. Learn more about autism on your own and teach your children and grandchildren to never shun or shy away from these incredible special kids. The more we know, the more we grow. Julius, Assistant Regional Superintendent. Regional Superintendent Dr. Kyle Thompson announced that Dr. John Julius will be transitioning into the role of Assistant Regional Superintendent as current assistant Dr. Zachary Standifer prepares for retirement next spring. Fortunately, says Thompson, the two will get to spend time together, making it a smooth transition without any hiccups in operations. Since 2020, Julius has worked as the superintendent of Casey Westfield Schools. Prior to this time, he was a superintendent and principal at Fairfield. Thompson noted that Julius's knowledge, integrity, and his ability to navigate challenges are what make him a great fit for the position. John is a well-respected leader who brings a vast array of professional experience to this position. Julius has previously served as superintendent, principal, assistant principal, athletic director, and teacher at a variety of school districts throughout his career. In addition, he has also served in law enforcement, most recently as the chief of police in Nioga from 2013 to 2014. And finally, Madison Marie Logan was selected as the Villa Grove High School Senior of the Month for May 2023. Congratulations, Madison. A committed student athlete, Madison has been a four-year member of the basketball, track, and cross-country teams, serving as co-captain for softball and track. She's also been an active member of FFA throughout high school, participating in the FFA Book Walk and the Downtown Planters programs. In addition, she's a member of the First Christian Church Youth Group. Outside of school, Madison enjoys riding horses, walking trails, and spending time with her family. She also works at a local horse farm, cleaning stalls and feeding the horses. After graduation, Madison plans to attend Parkland College, starting in the CNA and CMA programs. Villa Grove State Bank congratulates Madison on her selection as the May Student Senior of the Month and wishes her continued success. And that is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying see you again next week.